Adam.
Bo?
Yeah, Travis.
Yes.
Ah, I see we're all here. Well,
where else would we be?
I don't think of you being all there, so I don't know what. Fell into my trap. So Apple Lockdown tells me something very interesting about the world today. But before I tell you what it tells me, Travis.
Yes.
Spock, why don't you tell the listeners, our nice listeners, about what Apple Lockdown does?
Apple Lockdown is meant to be a security setting for your iPhone that will prevent it from getting any zero-click malware, specifically the Pegasus malware that we've seen a lot of headlines about.
In today's Tech Bytes, Apple's new effort to protect iPhones. Lockdown mode is meant to shield high-profile users like politicians from state-sponsored hackers. It turns off several vulnerable iPhone features, reducing the number of ways that hackers can attack a target.
Pegasus is spyware. Think of it statecraft spyware.
So, like, Jason Bourne would slip this into your phone, like a, I don't know.
I don't know, because I'm watching Travis is crinkling his eyes, which tells me he thinks it's something different than we're saying.
It is spyware.
It's spyware and steroids. It is really just in a league of its own.
Excuse me, but, like, bodybuilder on steroids. It's still a bodybuilder.
Sure. I mean, potato, potato. But this is something where it says zero-click malware.
Tomato, tomato?
And it got a DeVita. So listen, but why do I care about spyware? Oh, I rhymed.
Well, the main thing to keep in mind about this is you don't need to install anything. You don't need to download anything. It will install itself to your phone if you get it by text.
Whoa, you didn't answer my question.
Sure.
Adam.
Bo, yes.
Yeah, that's me.
Hello.
Why, like, none of us really need to be too concerned about spyware. Pegasus was developed in Israel. It's a very famous software that was developed specifically to spy on reporters, journalists, movie stars.
Dissidents.
But more like dissidents, like Adam said. Yeah. And so I don't see myself as, I may be a lot of things, but like of interest to a government is not one of them.
Speaking on behalf of your government, Bo, let me just tell you, you're of great interest to us.
Oh, yeah, for my piddly little tax.
There was like this great line from the movie The American President where it says, she's got an FBI file, to which the senator responded, my mother has an FBI file.
Right. I mean, so Apple cares enough about this that they've offered a $2 million bug bounty in addition to, I think, was it $10 million for some other project that has to do with stopping this kind of spyware. But they're really concerned, and their answer is to lock your phone down, which, like, how is that different from just turning your phone off?
Well, the main thing about the lockdown mode is that it prevents most incoming forms of communication for your phone. So that means even
well,
if your phone...
Well, no, that's not true. It prevents most incoming forms of media that can infect your device.
Right. Yeah. Important distinction. Yeah. But it also means that if you say plug in your phone into something, into a device, that in lockdown mode, that does not allow that to connect.
So Adam, I had this vision of like a submarine, like sealing its little turret and pumping the water out and going underwater as lockdown mode, but that's not it at all. All it is it's actually a functioning mode so that you can use your device without fear of somebody hacking you with Pegasus. I still think it's bonkers that anyone needs that. I just don't see myself ever using that feature.
Well, the issue is not whether you're going to use it or not. The issue is whether someone can get through lockdown mode, which Apple says they can't, in order to crawl into your phone for the purpose of spying on you.
So this is for like James Bond, for example. He's the Pegasus guy. He's the guy that's going to get this thing.
Well, in the movie Goldfinger, there was a button in his car. And he said, whatever you do, don't touch the button.
The button was the lockdown mode? What was it?
No, the button was the ejector seat.
So he needs that. I don't. I mean, that's
yeah, I mean,
that's,
you know,
my takeaway.
If he didn't like someone sitting next to him, you know, they weren't wearing the right perfume, whatever it was, he could press the button and psst, they were gone.
No, but I get it. And you have, so like, but with this lockdown feature, it is that button for the person you don't want to have sitting next to you, which is, you know, in this case, a spy. But, you know, this stuff does have a way of trickling down, Travis.
Yeah, because as soon as you know that there's the possibility of zero-click malware out there, that becomes a very enticing idea for folks, just because they can say, all right, it's possible. We know someone's already made this. How do we make this on our end?
Just like when people talk about the government wants a back door into your Apple phone or whatever, the issue is always, and what if the government gets breached and that information gets out in the wild? It goes, since we're dealing with malware as a service, software as a service, that people are taking it, tweaking it, and making it more and more user-friendly, making it easier, a lower barrier of entry for anyone who wants to do this kind of stuff. So it's all about lowering the barrier to entry.
And the idea that there could be a kind of low-rent Pegasus, and I think Pegasus is very expensive, you know, would be appealing to your garden variety stalkers and that's and or identity thieves, hackers. You know, a lot of people would be interested in this stuff.
Angry so, ex-spouses, you know, stuff like that.
It would be nice though if there was something other than just blocking all the, you know, turning your smartphone into a semi-dumb phone.
Yeah, I mean, it's technically the equivalent of just turning your iPhone into a ham radio and just saying that, you know, now it's secure. I know, it's not quite that bad.
Welcome to What the Hack, a show about hackers, scammers, and the people they go after. I'm Adam, virtual velociraptor.
I'm Bo, cyber amber knob on the handstick of a billionaire. With the DNA of something really awesome inside, that's me.
And I'm Travis, Cyber Chicken.
Today, Andy Pham shares his story of a white-collar crime-influenced real estate fiasco. Andy, welcome to What the Hack.
So, Bo and Adam, you guys know I'm a bit of a privacy geek, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, totally. I really just don't like the idea that just about anyone can find you online, can find out where you live or your email address or your phone number or anything. I just think that entire idea is super creepy.
There's so much of my data already out there, but is there something that you can do?
Yeah, actually, you can use Delete Me. Delete Me is a service that pretty much does the heavy lifting for you, where they go to all the data brokers that they have on file. And just pull your data and delete it on a regular basis.
I use it. I like it. And they make it quick, easy, and safe to remove your personal data online.
Well, yeah, with these data brokers, they can accumulate huge amounts of your personally identifiable information. And if all that information gets into the hands of a bad actor, that opens you up to a lot of risk.
And if you act now, you can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and use promo code WTH. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and enter promo code WTH at checkout.
That's joindeleteme.com/WTH, promo code WTH, which stands for What the Hack. And we thank you for supporting Delete Me and What the Hack.
This spring, get out there, enjoy the weather, and recapture the magic of riding a bike with Electric e-bike.
With an amazing variety of models built for riders of all abilities, it's never been easier to fall in love with riding again. Plus, every electric e-bike ships free and only requires quick, toolless assembly.
This is my first ever e-bike, and the experience has just been great. I was a little bit intimidated at first because I hadn't gone biking in a while, but the 500-watt motor that the electric e-bike comes with really gives you a nice little boost, especially if you're trying to go uphill or pick up some speed.
Data shows that e-bike riders take their bike out more often. That means you get more exercise, more exploration, and wait for it, fresh air.
And riding an e-bike isn't like, it's not cheating. It's just making it possible for you to be out there longer on each ride. And speaking of things going a little slower, you can finance an electric e-bike for as little as $49 a month.
Get into spring with Electric e-bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com. And please mention that What the Hack with Adam Levin sent you in the post-checkout survey.
That's electricebikes.com. Where are you coming from today, Andy?
I'm in Mesa, Arizona today. And I moved here from, I own a self-storage in Mesa, Arizona. I built this in 2006. Myself and a group of investors, we bought 20 acres of land. And in 2006, we built 60,000 square feet of self-storage out in the East Mesa off the 60. And when I was building this facility, this is I bought this property in 2005. And remember, this is at the time when we pay at the top of the market.
Yeah.
Then I got the entitlements, built it, and the market crashed, you know.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And this is like in 2008 when took out a loan from a bank and they said, well, you know, your valuations, when the market crashed, the bank will look at the value of the property. They say, well, you're not valued at $10 million anymore. So what we're going to do is we're not going to fund your last construction draw. And so what I did, I moved out to Mesa, Arizona in 2008 and worked with all my subs and say, look, guys, I need to get my certificate of occupancy. And if you can help me, just get me to the finish line. We all can get paid at the end. That's how this project.
Where you are right now. And did you? Yes. And that's brilliant. So you talked your subs into getting busy with you to get it finished, and then you can,
Yeah. Then we all got paid.
That's a big deal.
Then what I did is for me, in order to get this thing rented up during this recession,
yeah,
I didn't even have the money for the software. So what I did is I just went into Office Depot, bought a calendar, and I put a sign outside and I slept on the floor into my, we built a manager quarter. So I slept on the floor and I put up flags and say, you know, move-in specials.
Wow.
Then everyone move in. We have a huge retirement community right next to us. So when people would drive up with their trucks, then I run out and I say, let me unload a truck for you. I'll stack all the boxes inside the unit.
I was about to be super jealous of how successful you are, but like, it's all you, man. Go for it. No,
yeah,
I mean, that's a lot of work.
Yeah,
that's tremendous. That's tremendous.
Well, this is the American dream for sure.
Right.
So let me ask you. You obviously look like a young guy, certainly compared to Bo and me.
Hey.
Anyone looks like a young guy.
I was about to apply for a job. Like you just messed. That's like tortious interference. I was going to ask him for a job because I'm so sick of you. And you know what? Now he thinks I'm old. Thanks, Adam.
I'm actually 53 years old.
Oh, so am I. I could work with you. You do look really quite good for 53.
Bo is actually, but you are really 53, right, Bo? Kind of, sort of. I, on the other hand, am 72. So I, and Bo and my 10-year-old, they keep me young.
And Travis is there going, 23.
No, I can't believe I'm working with old people like this.
Oh, please.
Everyone's been assuming I'm in my 40s since I was about 5. So, yes.
Well, it's that voice of yours.
So Andy, let me ask, is real estate your thing? Have you always done real estate or?
So when I came here, I came to America in 1981. So from Vietnam. So my parents, in 1980, my mom put me on a boat. This is after the, when the United States pulled out of Vietnam in 1975.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we didn't, my dad was in the South, he fought for the South. So he decided he's not going to leave when my grandmother and her family, my mom's side, decided to leave with Americans in 1975. So I lived under communism for 5 years, you know. So at 10 years old, during this time in Vietnam, there was a war in Cambodia in 1980, and she didn't want me to fight to go join, because in Vietnam, when you're 18, you have to join the military. And under communism, you don't have a choice, you know. So they're going to send you to fight in Cambodia. You're not going to make it back alive, you know. So at that time, my mom decided to sell everything that she owns and put me on a boat with other kids. Then we were drifted out to sea for 3 days until we were rescued by the offshore oil rig in the middle of the ocean. And after that, they put us on islands in Malaysia. And that's how I grew up on the islands for a year and a half until my grandmother and sponsored me here in the U.S. So it took like two years.
You say your grandmother, Andy?
Yes.
Okay, so I assume you've already optioned the rights to your life story for a movie.
Because if not, Bo and I are going to
We're
going to start negotiating.
Your last $250,000 is right here, baby.
I'm ready.
You landed here at 5 and immediately started doing real estate. There must have been something else.
No, I landed when I was 11 years old. 1980. Okay. Yeah, 1981.
See, that's incredible.
It's also still a little young to do real estate. So where did you move? Where was your grandmother?
We grew up in the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, Bernardo nice. Hills. Lovely.
Yeah.
What did you study in college?
I studied political science.
Okay. Yes. So did I.
And was that something that you were able to leverage into real estate, or was it just sort of parallel interests?
Well, it's just, I thought, you know, I want to be a politician, you know, run for political offices. Mm-hmm. And after a while, I just changed my mind and say, you know what, I'm going to get my, I met someone, they say, you know, Andy, in the U.S., if you get licenses, you can make a lot of money. So mm-hmm. I went and got my real estate broker license, my insurance license, and my security license, Series 7s, which is you can sell stock, bonds, mutual funds.
Absolutely.
And how old were you when all this was happening?
Yeah, like really, I'm just feeling very, very unaccomplished right now.
I was like 20 years old.
Wow. Yeah, put us in our place here. You come to our living room. And
I was, you know, Adam, I was thinking he was talking about running for office. And I was like, just like Adam. And then he was like, and I got all these licenses. I was like, not just like Adam.
Not like Adam. I got one license. No, and you did. Yeah. Everything I learned in law school. So, you know.
Mr. JD over there. Yeah, no, but at 19 to have three different ones and be able to sell securities. Wow.
That's awesome. I mean, that's, again, people aspire to that. You did it. You're
making us look bad over here.
So, Andy, we joke, but we do know that you did have a rather super annoying experience that you came here to tell us about today.
Yes.
I just got back from France, and there was a lot of stuff I couldn't stream because I was in the wrong region. But using NordVPN, I was able to stream everything.
I use NordVPN too, but it's more to protect my private data, like bank details, passwords, and online identity. There are a million trackers online that are just sort of watching you, and NordVPN is a great way to get around those.
NordVPN can switch your virtual location, allowing you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price.
If you're traveling and you're using public Wi-Fi, NordVPN can protect you wherever you are.
It's not just that. NordVPN also comes with threat protection, which helps protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites.
NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world, and it'll only set you back the price of a cup of coffee a month.
To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/WTHack.
And hey, there's no risk. It's a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Check the link in the podcast description.
In 2005, I moved to Vegas. I did a project in Vegas called Caballos de Oro. So in 2005, with 84 investors of mine, we bought a piece of land northwest of Vegas. And this is you have to go back in 2004. I bought a piece of land, 5 acres in the southwest of Vegas. And we flipped it for 4.5 with entitlements, with a approved set of plans that a builder can build.
This spot, I'm not that familiar with Las Vegas. And for our listeners who may also only have a kind of main strip sort of understanding of Las Vegas, where was this property and what was it like?
So as you know, Vegas is like, you just think of it like a quadrant. There's 4 quadrants.
Right.
So you have Las Vegas Boulevard runs in the middle. Yep. And you have Northwest, Northeast, and you have Southeast, which is Henderson, and you have the Southwest, that's the up and coming, where you have the Red Rock Casino. So I'm like, we are like in the Summerlin area, northwest of Vegas. when Vegas built, completed the Beltway highway, called it 215, now you can go 360.
It's like a loop. It's the loop around Vegas. Yeah.
And this is inside the loop?
Inside the loop.
Okay, so it's not cheap. So you didn't buy that for, so that's why, because it sounded expensive to me, but now I get it.
Yeah, what you have to envision yourself is this 5 acres. The back of you is Red Rock Canyon National Park. The view is the key, you know, anything that you buy in Vegas.
Now, were you building multifamily or were you building single family homes?
We were thinking about building 30 townhomes.
Okay.
On that property. Got approved for 30 townhomes. Then so this is 2005. So I paid $5 million.
Yeah.
It took like 16 months to get approval because in 2006-07, the city of Las Vegas was very busy with this major developments. So you have to get a zone change and you have to get approval for their entitlements.
Right.
What was the rate of return you were expecting on that overall?
Our cost was $500 per square foot to build.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's not cheap.
No.
So you were building nice townhouses.
That's 2005. So that's,
That's right. And we project to sell for $1,000 a foot. So
that's also not cheap.
I guess, as someone who knows absolutely nothing about real estate or development or anything like that, I think what they have to wonder is, you obviously start off with a lot of research here, but how do you pick the spot? Like, why Las Vegas specifically, or why the Mesa, Arizona?
Okay, because you have to look at where the growth is. Mm-hmm. And Vegas in 2005 has the longest growth, you know, growth in history. Mm-hmm. With real estate, people are moving there. The key for Nevada is there's no state tax.
Right.
So you have a lot of Californians are moving there. You're going to save 11% in taxes if you make over $250,000 per year.
Right.
Right.
So that's where we saw the growth in all the Sunbelt states like Nevada, Arizona. Cost of living in Arizona is a lot cheaper than California.
Yep.
And you have the huge growth in Phoenix area right now in the last 5 years.
Well, yeah, people have been pouring across the border.
That's right.
You know, when we started our company, part of the reason that we came to Arizona is there was a huge pool of very qualified fraud experts because all of the major financial institutions had moved their fraud centers from the San Francisco area to Arizona for taxes and work rules. So there was Arizona was kind of like the Wild West in those days.
In terms of being the Wild West, were any of those regulations in place for, say, like anti-fraud or anything, or was it just more red tape?
No. You know, when we bought the property in 2005, when you buy a property, you usually buy in an LLC, right? Or a C-Corp, or S-Corp. Because number one is LLC is limited liability corporation, it's a pass-through corporation. So you insulate yourself for liability reason. You don't want to buy in your name because if someone walks across your property, he gets injured. Now you get sued. He can bring you in. At least an LLC is a separate entity, and you insulate it from legal liability.
All right. So you create this LLC. And you put the property in it, right?
Right.
Then what?
Then got it approved for 30 townhomes. Then the market crashed. I couldn't get construction loan because when the market crashed in 2009, the banks are not lending.
This sounds the same as what just happened to Mesa.
Yep, same.
Okay. It's called economic cycles, Bo.
So, Hey, I resemble this ignorance you seem to think I have. But for real, like, did you do the same? I mean, did you put a sign up outside this property and start building?
No, because in Nevada, we just have raw land. We didn't have any physical structure on the property.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So with raw land, you can just land bank it. That's what we did. You know, when the market, you can't get the loan. So what you do, you just pay the property taxes. So in 2015, you know, I've been paying the property taxes for 10 years.
10 years,
and, yeah. In 2015, on New Year's Eve, which is December 31st, 2015, someone I didn't know went into the Secretary of State, removed me as the managing member of my own LLC. And within 30 days, he took out two loans on the property. He went out and used the property as a collateral for two private lenders who he borrowed against, you know, used the land as a collateral. So he borrowed, you know, $1.7 million. One loan is for $1.2, the other one for $550. And in 2016, he didn't pay off the loan, and I received a foreclosure notice. What happened when you don't pay off a hard money loan in a year? The loan will call, the lender will call the note due. And if you don't pay off the interest,
they take the property.
They take the property. And the trustee is the third party that in charge of the sale. They have to reach out to all the previous owners in the chain of title, because every property has a chain of title, what they call a title report.
Just to kind of back it up here, because I'm a little bit flabbergasted by what you said.
No, I'm just, also, Travis, I'm with you 100%. Right. I'm like, huh?
Yeah, my jaw's been on the floor since you said that. How did he do this? Do you know?
All you have to do is, you just, if anybody with any knowledge of white collar crime, all you have to do is find an LLC that has a piece.
Andrew, our producer, beep him everything he says from here to when he finishes telling you how to do the crime.
Yeah, we don't want to do we don't want a how to.
No, but, we do actually, Andy. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. No. What? So is it that easy?
Very easy, because the Secretary of State of Nevada, their charter, when they was established by the people of Nevada, the citizens of Nevada, they're just a middleman. They don't verify anything. Anytime that you form an LLC in Nevada, that's how people do it. They submit the articles of incorporation to the state, and the state just accepts it.
And the state goes, yeah, whatever you say.
Boy, howdy, Adam. Yeah. I guess you, Travis, and I are going to have to set up some LLCs in Las Vegas.
But do you know if they did it like in person or electronically, or like,
right
is
now.
It really just walking right on in and saying like, hi, I'm now the head of this?
Yeah, what you do is go on the Secretary of State's website, and for $150, $175, you can amend the list. You can amend the list of managers, the physical address of the business. Is so easy. And all you have to do is, if you're a crook, there's like a disclaimer say, if you commit this, it's going to be Class C crime, but no one cares, you know?
Well, they have a clause saying, are you a crook? And then you say,
No, not me.
Right. No. I'm just a guy who owns this property. I'm Andy Pham, as a matter of fact. Yeah, that's the ticket.
Right. But he changed he changed the name completely, right?
What he did is just remove me.
Oh, geez.
Adam, remove me as a managing member. You know, when you remove somebody as a managing member, you put yourself in there, now you have the authority to act.
Totally.
On behalf of their company.
But okay, totally. I have a question, Adam. Yeah, so I love your house in Phoenix. Andy, can you help me? I just want to remove him from it. And no, you can't help me. How come this guy could do it? I don't get it. Like,
see, the bad news in my house in Phoenix, it comes with my wife. And trust me, like a hawk. She watches everything.
She would, and also she's a boxer, so she would really probably not a dog either. She like the like Muhammad Ali style. She punches.
Yeah, she would hurt you.
For real, like how come? Obviously, I can't just walk over to the whoever the authorities are in Oregon where Travis is and say, I'm taking Travis off of the deed of his house. It's my house now.
You could probably swing it, to be honest with you.
In fact, Travis is ready to negotiate with you right now. So.
Yeah, no. I don't want his house because he doesn't take care of his lawn. But
it's spotless. One of my neighbors just helped.
I'm wondering, for real, like there are no protections. You never got a note from them saying, hey, interesting that you're no longer on here, or by the way, you're no longer on this charter or whatever.
So the guy did this on New Year's Eve, right? Which is
nobody's watching December. On New Year's Eve, and it's Vegas, right, for heaven's sake.
2015. So usually when someone make a change to your LLC, the Secretary of State will send you like a very generic email, say you the amended list has been updated for your company. And so what happened to us is it went. My office manager is the one that handles all the LLC renewal fee.
Right.
And she does that on your anniversary's date. So when we formed a company that hold that piece of property was in November so of 2005. So she went and updated the list in November and she doesn't think about it anymore because you have to come in and pay the annual renewal fee every single year before your on your anniversary date, which is the day that you formed the company.
Okay.
So she did that in November and she didn't think about it until next year of November, but the crook went in on December. So when she got, when the generic email came, it went into her spam folder and she didn't know.
Oh, and it was genius because it was sent, Adam, on New Year's Eve, when not only did it go into the spam folder, but it got buried in the spam folder,
along with all the New Year's Eve party invitations.
Well, and all the other crap. So that's that is intense and smart.
And you know what? This happens a lot because because my story got published in the Las Vegas Review Journal, and a lot of people reach out to me. So you know, in Vegas, there's a lot of property owners that own properties, rental properties, then they live overseas. So you know what? When they own the rental properties, then they collect the rent. It's, you know, the tenant pay them the monthly rent in their, you know, in their bank account. And next thing you know, because all the rental properties own in an LLC, you know, most of the smart people. And next thing you know, the tenant or the people, unscrupulous crooks, they remove them as a managing member of their own LLC and say, look, I have control of the house now because I'm the manager of this LLC that owns the home. So that happens a lot in Vegas, you know, as people own properties in an LLC, rental property.
Well, I'm actually watching Bo right now. He's on his computer and he's at the Secretary of State's office in Nevada right now looking for properties.
I already set up three LLCs. One is Watch Me Steal This Property, LLC. And the
this kind of a problem is also a real problem in the elder community too. I mean, if you're talking about in the non-business community, a lot of senior citizens who own homes without mortgages, people find a way to steal their identities and then take that property and get a mortgage against it. And the only time the victim finds out about it is exactly what happened to you, is when the mortgage wasn't properly paid for on a monthly basis, and then they suddenly get a foreclosure.
And also, Adam, it's like another a kind of crime where we all know about that kind of elder abuse and targeting elders. But I didn't know this so much about this business identity theft, which what happened here.
This is a thing. Now, Andy, based on this business identity theft situation with you, this is horrible. But I get the feeling a guy like you did not take this sitting down.
No, I get the feeling he turned it into a business. Actually. I think he was like, this gives me an idea.
Yeah.
No, but for real, like, what did you do? How did you get the property back, or did you have to eat the loss, sir?
So it took me 4 years.
What?
To get my property back.
Four years.
The court system does not move swiftly.
So this is worse than a debit card, Adam.
Yes.
And were you able to identify the person who did it, or the people?
Yes, I did.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, when you find out that person, when you file the quiet title action to get your property back, when someone steals your property, you have to go through what they call quiet title action. And you discover that the guy that took out the loan is the individual that lived in Colorado.
What?
Yeah.
Well, hold on. Now, silence. I think I hear it coming. I hear Bruce Willis loading a gun, and he's really pissed off, and he's about to get some, I hear a revenge story coming. Did you do anything to this guy? I mean, please, come on. You probably grew up in a situation where you're good with your hands. I mean, at least till you're 11. So, come on. Did you get it? Did you beat him up? Did you slap him happy?
So, let me get this straight.
No,
you're asking a man to talk about
a felony.
Physical
a felony,
harm.
Yes.
A felony.
I want him to admit to a felony.
I don't think you're going to get a straight answer to this.
Okay.
My bet is, I could be wrong. My bet is you effectively use the legal system and then you use the criminal justice system as well, correct?
Right. Yes. What I did is going through the legal system cost me over $500,000 in legal fees just to get my land back.
Isn't that amazing? Someone steals it and then you got to pay.
Yeah.
And it's not like they got the money to pay you back. Were you able to get like a judgment against them and get money back from these guys?
I got back only the court awarded me $250,000 in legal fees. So I'm trying to get that from the guy, the crook that stole the property. So throughout this whole ordeal, there's so many, this whole story is like unbelievable. I could never perceive that could happen to me, because it's just, when you tell people the story, they couldn't believe it, and how could someone steal your property? And it's easy. Just go on the Secretary of State, remove somebody else's LLC member as the managing member.
Unbelievable.
So,
well, who?
Wait.
Bo, take your hand off the mouse. Take the hand off the mouse right now.
I think it's Travis, actually. It looks like he's the one who's up to something.
I was just going to ask, after you found out who he was, like, what was the guy? I'm imagining a black cowboy hat and, handlebar mustache or something.
A real villain. Yeah. Who was criminal?
The guy was a dentist in Colorado.
A dentist? Oh,
wow. Yeah.
Oh my God. The story just gets better and better.
You had your business, you experienced business identity theft via dentist. Nobody likes the dentist, but that's really taking it a bit far.
This guy is.
So, did he have a history of stealing people's ID while he had them on laughing gas? Like, who is this guy?
He has a history of doing this in the past,
Wow.
Yeah, that's the reason why.
So when you found this out, did it help you kind of?
So what I did is, when you find this out, you go with the legal system, but the legal system is very cumbersome and painful, and it's just very slow. And sometimes you want to, you just want your property back.
And you want to call Bruce Willis and you want to slap the guy.
And for me, the thing that I want to do is try to shame this person, because that's all you can do,
Right.
So what I did is, when the story got published in the Las Vegas Review Journal, I flew up there, and in high school, you read a book called Scarlet Letter. You want to shame this guy,
Yes.
And hand out newspapers.
So you were going to put a scarlet letter on this dude. Wait a second.
That's right.
Now, this is the man, Adam, who, when he couldn't finish his project in Mesa, moved to Mesa and started to help people unpack. So I'm kind of guessing we're going to get a call back here.
This almost reminds me of, there was a movie many, many years ago called Marathon Man, starring Dustin Hoffman. And there's a scene in the movie where they're trying to get him to give information, and he's innocent, he knows nothing. And they put him in a dentist chair, and they take a drill, and they just start drilling his teeth. So I'm saying to myself, Andy went to Denver and got the guy in his own dental chair.
Yeah. And Adam, started drilling. Sick puppy, man.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you got to see the movie. You got to rent the movie.
All right, that doesn't, I don't think that's, I don't that's, think he did that. I don't, okay. think, I don't think he did that. But what did you do? How did you shame him?
So what I did is, I also built a website called, stopj.com.
Oh, I love this.
Nice.
So that morning, I got 250 newspapers from the, Las Vegas Review Journal articles. I brought it with me on the plane. So I start highlighting the articles on the front page. Then I put a flyer on there. I put land thief, dentist from Colorado, land thief,
If you know this man.
That's right. I call him a land thief. Then I hand out the newspaper. On top of it, there's a 8x11. Photo of him within.
Oh, wow.
And this is in his neighborhood, or?
Yeah, around his office, dental office.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All the offices. Every door.
So we happen to have Mr. Land Thief Naughty Pants here. Mr. Land Thief, how did you feel about it when Mr. Pham was passing your photograph around?
Not great.
Oh, not great. So, what did he do? Did he do anything?
Like, he felt like there was a cavity in his heart. Right?
He did have a cavity in his heart. But listen, Andy, what did he do? Did he chase you out of the neighborhood? Anything, or did you just keep doing it until he had a heart attack?
I did it for a day. And next thing you know, within 5 months later, he filed a defamation lawsuit against me.
Don't you love it? I'm going to take your property. You're going to find out that I took your property. You're going to tag me as the person who stole your property. And then you're going to come after me saying, well, yeah, but I didn't really steal your property because no one said I stole it yet.
Months later, by the way.
Yeah, 5 months is a pretty long time.
How come it took so long?
Because he waited for me. He waited for the website. He waited for, you know, all the things that he couldn't get me for the defamation. That's the reason why he waited out. And because I went to the police, I went to the FBI, I went to everybody asking for help, and nobody helped you. They say, just go, this is a civil matter. You have to go to the legal system.
How much money did he get away with, this dude?
He got $1.7 million.
But did they ultimately go, I mean, did the financial institutions go back after him at all? Since when it was—
No, because we subpoenaed all the bank records. The money came through from escrow, when the lenders loaned the money, subtracted their points and their fees. Then it went to the Bank of America. He opened the bank account under our name, which is the name of the LLC, Caballos de Oro.
Right.
And we subpoenaed the record. We saw the money came in from the lenders.
Yep.
And it went out the next couple of days. It all went out. You know, he paid it off. He loaned it to himself. He took out money paying off other people. It went to all, like, the crooks. But then
did the lenders ever get the money back at all? Are they looking for you to give the money, to give them?
That's right. The lender got title insurance, so they always going to get paid, and the legal fees to pay.
But I would assume the title insurance company would then go after whoever stole the property, right?
Yeah, the title insurance. So throughout this whole ordeal, one thing I learned is the title insurance, they don't want to sell until they drag you, until you go bankrupt. They want you to sell the property first before they pay out whatever the liability is, you know?
All right, so the bottom line is you have your property back, right? And the money, they've given up, so they're not coming after you for the money, right?
No, I didn't get the money because you didn't take
the money.
It wasn't yours.
Yeah, I didn't take the money. Yeah.
So that was their loss. They had to go claw that back.
Yeah, because to 8,000 pages of discovery, I never give this guy authority to act on my behalf.
Right.
And I never got any consideration, because when you sell something,
you get consideration. You
have to since consideration could be money, could be a Rolex watch, could be like a farm, could be anything. And I got nothing. So there's no way that they can say, okay, Andy, you got some money. I didn't get anything.
But Bo's got a tractor, by the way, that he'd like to give you as consideration.
Oh, no, I'd be happy, you know, I'd be happy to help you just so that you let me in on the entry level on whatever you do next, but just as a friend. But I would say here, my tractor is in Connecticut, though. I don't know. It might be cheaper just to buy one in Nevada. The question I have is, you know, you seem like a sane individual and a kind guy. You look like a nice guy. But that's not why you're here today. Are you telling us this story just because you like telling about horrible things that have happened to you? I mean, it sounds to me like the only reason I can imagine talking about this is to make sure that other people don't fall victim to a similar kind of problem. Business identity theft, I thought was pretty uncommon, but I'm wondering now.
It's not really uncommon, yeah.
That's right. Adam is right. Because you live in 20 years ago, when the state digitized information, they didn't put safeguards for business owners. And most of the business owners, small business owners, and you think about when you form an LLC, you think outside our mind, I have to worry about my employees. I worry about how am I going to meet payrolls. No one cares about the LLC. Now with the crooks, they know that they can go online, and for $175, you can amend the list and hijack the company and take out credit on the business. And you never know.
And if you do it during the time of year when someone's not looking.
That's right.
Or if you get your email address compromised somehow.
That's right.
Oh, imagine that. If they just hack into your email so they know that when that email's coming, they can just grab it and you never see it.
Yeah. One reused password.
Wow.
But I also feel understanding your story now and understanding your life history now, this doesn't just end with you getting the property back and you're going on your merry way. I get the feeling you've used this as an opportunity to help other people.
That's right. So what I did is, you know, when you go into a really traumatic experience in your life, you want to build, you want to see, okay, what's my purpose? So you say, okay, where am I, why did this happen to me? So you internalize that and you figure out solutions and you say, okay, I can build a company called Company Alarm. So what we do is we people have this cell phone 24/7. It's like their right hand, you know, extension drive right hand. So what they do is anytime that someone make a change, we send you a text notification to, let's say you put five different mobile numbers, your kids, everybody, they can get the same text and say, Adam, you have been removed as the managing member of Adam Levine, you know, Levin LLC.
Adam right. Levine, no, Maroon 5. Levin. Yeah, you're no longer.
I'd like to remove Adam Levine and become the managing head of his LLC.
But now, what's the name of the company again?
It's called Company Alarm.
Company Alarm. And does it operate by monitoring these Secretary of State transactions?
That's the way.
Is it all secretaries of state or just the state of Nevada?
28 states we are in.
28 states.
Why not Connecticut? Please say Connecticut. Are you in Connecticut?
No, we're not.
We need you. We need you.
Secretary of State in Connecticut. You should be listening. Is that just like you? How does that work? You get meetings with them, and then you sort of figure out. They try to figure out whether or not they need you, or how what's the arrangement?
So what we do is Nevada. We have. We build our software to monitor the data in the back. When you form an LLC, you have your physical address, your managing member, your name. Then we have that field. Then our software, when you sign up with us, our software will verify that information. So when you signed up, you have those fields that you filled in. Then you say this is correct. Then every 4 hours, we monitor the state's website. If there's a change in one field, like your name, then we would notify you.
Every 24 hours, you say?
Every 4 hours.
Every four hours.
Yeah. And so is that like an automated script or automated technology, or do you just have to have some folks kind of sitting there hitting a refresh once every 4 hours?
Or sitting in the office going, yeah. I saw you. Who are you? Yeah. What did you do?
Yeah, just so, wondering how the process works there.
So in Nevada, we have... So our software, what we do is we subscribe to the FTP, mm-hmm. the data protocol.
The file transfer protocol?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Then we compare that every day, every 24 hours, if there's a change.
Oh, that makes sense. So you just take the two separate files, just see what's changed, and that will give you the notification.
And it's it's public information, so it's...
That's right. Yeah. You got it.
This is brilliant. This is a brilliant idea. So Adam, you just figured out how we can make our next... gazillion trillion dollars.
Absolutely. With Andy. We're going to figure this out together. Yeah. All of us.
No, Andy, it's brilliant.
It's true.
You got to start somewhere.
That's right.
Thanks. I appreciate the vote of confidence.
Anyway, Andy, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Terrific. Thank you. Holy f***.
Dude.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, a lot of the stuff that he was talking about in terms of the real estate market was way over my head, just completely outside of my area of expertise. But when he was really explaining it, I was just like, oh, wow, not only does that make more sense when you're describing it, I also had no idea it was that easy to defraud people in the real estate industry.
But I also didn't understand, and Adam's, worked in real estate for a long time. So this, Adam, thank you for nothing. I didn't realize how smart it is to be in that business, because clearly he's done very well for himself.
I don't know. Listen, I mean, many of the great fortunes in this country and around the world have been real estate based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I am amazed. I am not going to, contrary to your defamation of me, I am not going to start stealing LLCs. But that was really eye-opening, and I am so glad, Adam, that you brought Andy to our attention.
Business identity theft is something that most people don't think about, and they really do need to think about it. It's again, just another example of the fact that ultimately you have to be your own guardian, because you never know at any moment what someone can do to you. And therefore, it's important to just stay alert, be aware, practice, as we like to talk about, the three M's. How do you minimize your risk? How do you effectively monitor? In this case, he didn't know, because no one told him until it was almost too late.
I mean, it was too late. And this, I just, you know, my dentist, I'm not kidding.
You're treading on very sensitive territory.
Listen,
buddy.
He's got his hands in his mouth with sharp tools. My dentist is
in your mouth with sharp tools.
It's late over here in New York. He's a saint. My dentist is a saint. And I am mad at Andy's thief, because he's hurt a profession that I thought was ironclad. I thought dentists were, I felt sorry for him. They're always feeling bad about how they're inflicting pain on people. Like, this guy clearly wasn't feeling bad about it.
Well, I think he was feeling bad after he had a bunch of glossy photos of himself printed up.
That's a different kind of bad. That's butt sore.
Right.
That's really pretty fascinating. I mean, that takes, but then again, Andy has demonstrated throughout his career, he's got guts.
Yeah, that is next level thinking. I strongly approve of that revenge.
I do too, and I feel like I was pretty close on the Bruce Willis thing. Mm-hmm. He just did
you
it
were
with paper.
Close.
He did it with
you
paper. I love him. I love Andy. I love him. And Adam.
Love him.
I know. Adam.
Bo.
My birthday is only I don't know how many months away. It's not, you know, quite a few months away. You have time to figure this out. I would like an Andy Fam T-shirt. And if you get me an Andy Fam T-shirt,
because you are fam,
I'm a fan. No, I'm a fan. I would love to be fam, but I'm a fan. I'm a fam fan, and I want the T-shirt. And I'll tell you something: I will wear that T-shirt on the show, and you can put it on Instagram, and I will be proud of it because he's cool. What the Hack with Adam Levin is a production of Loud Tree Media.
It's produced by Andrew Stephen, the man with two first names.
You can find us online at loudtreemedia.com and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Adam K. Levin.